So like you said, my title today is Polymorphisms at the DRD2 Gene Affect Physiological Responses in Heifers Fed Tall Fescue Silage. It's a little outline of my discussion today. I'll give a short introduction on the importance of tall fescue, some information about tall fescue toxicosis, then cover my cattle genotyping, then go over some research objectives, experimental design, some results and conclusions, and then take any questions. So for the introduction, tall fescue is one of the most popular perennial cool season grasses in the United States. It is grown on approximately 13 million hectares nationwide. It's popular because it has good tolerance to overgrazing, drought, heat stress, and cold temperatures, low soil fertility, and poor drainage, as well as insects. So I've included a map here of the United States and where the tall fescue is best adapted in the red area. Tall fescue toxicosis. Tall fescue is infected with an endophyte, which is Epicloe sinophyla. It is a fungus which grows with inside or between the cells of the plant, a symbiotic relationship. There are three different endophyte associations. There is toxic, endophyte-free, and novel endophyte-infected varieties. The toxic varieties, they contain ergot alkaloids, the most popular of which is ergovaline. Ergovaline causes negative effects on livestock as well as the other ergot alkaloids, but it causes good plant persistence due to the lack of the stresses in the livestock and insects. Then there is the endophyte-free, which does not contain the endophyte, so it doesn't produce the ergot alkaloids. So as a result, there is poor plant persistence, but there is no harm to the livestock because it does not contain those ergot alkaloids. And then the final one is the novel endophyte association. It contains the endophyte, but the endophyte does not produce the harmful ergot alkaloids. So the plants become more persistent, and then there is no harm to the no harm to the livestock. Tall fescue toxicosis causes a lot of negative effects in livestock. The first two on this list, decreased weight gain and reduced intakes, are the ones that I will cover today. But there are a lot of other ones there, as you can see, that cause a bunch of negative effects, some of which can be seen in the picture on the bottom. All of those negative effects combined cost U.S. livestock producers over $1 billion annually, with the agronomic solutions for tall fescue toxicosis being costly, risky, and time-consuming. For my cattle genotyping that I used on my research, I used the DRD2 gene, which was published by Campbell et al. In 2014. It was research conducted between the University of Missouri and University of Tennessee. That gene is a dopamine receptor, D2. There is a single nucleotide polymorphism that was discovered where a guanine and adenine substitution exists. This gene is important in the regulation of prolactin secretion. One of those negative effects that I listed earlier was a decrease in serum prolactin, with tall fescue toxicosis. The animals that I am using are the homozygous animals, genotyped as either tolerant, which I'll refer to as either a T or AA, and the susceptible, which I'll refer to as either GG or C. Here I have a picture of the two different animals that were on my research. The animal on the left is the tolerant animal, and the animal on the right is the susceptible animal. You'll notice that the hair coat and body condition of the two animals is different, the one on the left being an improved hair coat, a better looking animal. For my research objectives, they were to determine the difference in dry matter intake of genotyped heifers when fed tall fescue silage infected with either the novel or the toxic endophyte, and then to determine also the difference in average daily gain of genotyped heifers fed either Bar Optima or Kentucky 31. For my experimental designs, I had four treatments in a 2x2 factorial arrangement. The tall fescue types were Bar Optima plus E34, which was my novel variety, and then Kentucky 31, which was my wild type toxic variety. And then the genotypes were tolerant AA animals or susceptible GG animals. It was a completely randomized design, and the data was analyzed in SAS 9.4 using PROC-GLIMIX. So for the tall fescue rations used on this research, the rations were harvested in the spring, about the same time each year, and then baled and wrapped and allowed to ensile. Each ration was then tested for the ergovaline and ergot alkaloid levels. In the bar optima rations, the ergovaline levels averaged 50 parts per billion, and the total ergot alkaloid levels averaged 265 parts per billion. The Kentucky 31 ergovaline levels averaged 322 parts per billion, with the first 2 years of research averaging at 405, and the third year at 155. Then total ergot alkaloids averaged relatively the same through all years at 2,183 parts per billion. The rations had minimal supplement added just to make the rations isonitrogenous and isocaloric. The heifers that I used for my research were animals that were raised on University of Missouri research centers, either the Southwest Research Center in Mount Vernon, Beef Research and Teaching Farm in Columbia, Missouri, or the Forage Systems Research Center in Linnaeus, Missouri. All the animals were Black Angus, Red Angus, or Simmental Angus cross from 9 to 14 months of age. They were fed in the GrowSafe feeding system at the Southwest Research Center. A little bit about the GrowSafe feeding system. So each animal is fitted with an EID tag in their ear. When they come through those bars, they lower their head. The bunk reads the EID tag in their ear. So each day we add the rations to those bunks, and they're continuously weighed by one weigh bar on both sides, and then go to this box, which is then transmitted back to the headquarters, where the intakes of the animals can be continuously monitored. And then at the end, we can calculate the total intake of each animal on the study. So for the GrowSafe pen layout, there are 8 feeding pens with 2 GrowSafe feeders per pen. There were 6 to 7 heifers per pen, with 48 heifers in the first year and 56 in years 2 and 3. The intake was continuously collected by the GrowSafe, and then the heifers were weighed for the average daily gains every 35 days. And I have a diagram here of the GrowSafe layout. You'll see that the two bunks per pen, and then water is shared between pens. For some data, this is the dry matter intake I've adjusted to a 300 kilogram animal. I have labeled on the bottom the treatments. The T stands for the tolerant animals, and the C stands for the susceptible animals, BO being bar optima and KY being Kentucky 31. Each bar color represents a different year. You'll see the green bars in 2013. The bar optima rations were significantly higher than the animals on Kentucky 31 that were susceptible on the far right. And then the Kentucky 31 tolerant animals showed an intermediate response between those two. In 2014, we saw that there was no significant difference between the genotypes, but there was a significant difference between the ration types. And then in 2015, there was an inconsistent response to the previous 2 years. And there was a year-by-treatment interaction seen in this data. So just to go to specifically the 2013 dry matter intakes, what we saw here, just to get it narrowed down, is the bar optima animals consumed roughly 6.3 to 6.4 kilograms per hectare per day, with the Kentucky 31 susceptible animals, which are the GG, at 5.7. They were significantly less than the bar optima. And then that intermediate, like I said, of the Kentucky 31 tolerant animals, averaging 6.0 kilograms per hectare per day. For the average daily gains of those animals, you'll see similarly the 2013, there was no difference between the Bar Optima ration, either genotype, and then the Kentucky 31 susceptible animals were significantly lower, again, than the Bar Optima rations, and that intermediate shown on the tolerant animals. And similarly, in 2014, there was a significant difference between the rations, but no significant difference between the genotypes. And then in 2015, you'll notice that there's no significant difference between any of the rations. This is likely due to the 155 parts per billion ergovaline levels that I noted earlier. To go back again specifically to the 2013 average daily gains, we see that the Bar Optima rations were not significantly different, and the susceptible animals on Kentucky 31 gained significantly less than those on Bar Optima, with an intermediate level of the tolerant animals on Kentucky 31. So in conclusion, the DRD2 genotype by itself shows an inconsistent response. In 2013, the tolerant heifers consuming Kentucky 31 had average daily gains and dry matter intakes that were not significantly different from heifers fed Bar Optima. And then, depending on the environmental factors, DRD2 gene is often important, but there are other complementary genes that regulate the responses to the alkaloids, and future research will be conducted and analyzed, analyzing the data to determine those complementary genes' effects. With that, I will thank you and take any questions. Yes.
So why do you think the concentration was so much lower in 2015? Was it later harvest days or 1 year?
Okay, so his question was, why were the ergovaline levels so much different in 2015? I believe that it was due that so each year they were harvested relatively the same time within a few days. I think in 2015 what we saw was a cooler spring, so the ergovaline levels had not had the time to develop and, you know, build up in the plants when they were harvested. I was shooting for the same harvest date, and then in doing that, the ergovaline levels were not as high as I needed. Yes.
You might have explained it, but were they fed fresh forage that was harvested and mowed in, or was it hay that you made and you fed the hay back?
So the rations were cut and then baled as silage, and then wrapped and allowed to ensile, and then we mixed those grounded up in a grinder or a grinder mixer, and with minimal supplement, and then that was fed. So it was an ensiled tall fescue.
And that alkaloid level you mentioned prior to the harvest or in the silage?
In the silage. Yes, we measured the ergot alkaloid and ergovaline levels after ensiling.
Did you measure before you ensiled to see what the difference was?
No.
Before?
Yes. Do I think that the ergovaline levels?
Yeah.
No, I think that it was just a matter of that whenever we cut the forage, you know, we did not see, or the ergovaline levels had not increased enough in that forage. It wasn't an effect of harvesting anyway. Any other questions?
We have time for one more quick question, Ben.
The question was, what's the logic between why there would be a difference in intake between tolerant and susceptible? It would just be because they were suffering from the effects of tall fescue toxicosis. So if you're consuming a toxic ration, if the tolerant animals are going to be having a higher intake with, you know, the... So if you're looking at tolerant animals not having the negative symptoms of tall fescue toxicosis, theoretically they would be have a higher intake.
All right, let's thank our speaker, Brett.
Thank you.